Documentary Podcast. Today is Monday, December 2nd, 2013, and you're listening to episode 80. My name is Rob, and hanging out with me tonight is that same old guy that is hanging out with me every time, Mr. Jason Singerlin.
Yes.
How are you?
Good. I look different, though, now, don't I? Because I shaved my huge, bushy November beard.
What is that? What is Movember? What?
Well, there's Movember, and then there's No Shave November. Movember, I think was first. I could be wrong. Movember was the idea that you would grow a mustache. And there might be some reason behind it, but I don't know what it was. But I already had a mustache, like you. I have a beard, but you do have a mustache.
I got a stash and a soul patch, baby.
Yes, you do. Like somebody from the Old West.
Yeah. You know, I started growing this after watching Deadwood.
I know.
Like, I used to have the stash and you know, the chin, the full chin.
Yeah.
Then after watching Deadwood, I was like, dang, dude.
Yeah, because Timothy Olyphant rocked that.
Oh, man, he sure did. All those guys on that show rocked it.
Yeah.
He either had that or a full beard.
Yep.
But, man, yeah. I got to say, Justified, I mean, Timothy Olyphant is still cool, but Justified, the facial hair is weak.
Yeah.
He's got a goatee, but it's like with clippers, so it's way too short, so you can sometimes don't even know that it's there.
Yeah,
totally weak.
It'd be cooler if it was that thick cowboy.
Oh man, because he's a cowboy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he wears a hat,
right? So he should just have the big stash and soul patch like a cowboy.
I like that. Let's go with that. Write the show, tell him.
I should we all should. Let's start an online petition to get the producers of Justified to change the lead character's facial hair. Let's do that.
I'm sure there's that one website where you can just do petitions for no reason.
Let's petition whitehouse.gov, right? You can do that on whitehouse.gov. Let's start a petition on whitehouse.gov to change Timothy Olyphant's facial hair in Justified.
Yes.
Waylon Givens. Yeah.
Waylon Jennings, maybe. Yeah, okay. Good to know.
Yeah. So I would sign that petition.
Oh, okay.
Thanksgiving just happened.
Thanksgiving.
This is the first time we've recorded since Thanksgiving.
It is.
Yeah, I know the show posted in between here, but this is the first one we've recorded since Thanksgiving. How was your Thanksgiving?
Pretty good. Not anything fancy.
No?
Just saw some family.
Run of the mill?
Yeah. Ate some turkey, saw some family.
Yeah, right on. Good.
How about you?
Yeah, about the same. My dad went to go see my brother in California, so I hung out with Christine's family, and we ate some turkey and some stuffing and some other foods, and hung out in the basement listening to records in my father-in-law's house.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was all right. I've had worse holidays.
I bet.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, so what have we been playing?
What have you been playing?
Recently, I was I pulled out an old game of mine. It's a Perfect Information game, one of those nice wood games called Corridor. And basically, the board is a grid, and it's a grid of like channels cut into like picture a checkerboard, except for the squares are up and the lines are carved in.
Okay.
So then you have these little blocks of wood that look like doors almost, like cut like a door kind of.
Okay.
And the idea is to get all the way, the idea is to use those to make blockades while you're trying to move a piece across the board.
Hmm.
On your turn, you can either move a piece or place a blockade. You can't go all the way across the board. You can't make like a solid wall.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
That's the game. And it's one of those games that makes you think a lot about what you're doing.
So you just take turns placing pieces?
Or you either placing a piece or moving your token.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yep. And it sounds simple, but man, if you get the right players playing that game and the thinking that goes on in that, it's pretty awesome.
Do you have enough doors that you can cover the entire board?
No.
Okay.
No, there will you always have to have a path. You can't block the way.
Can't wall something off completely.
Right.
Okay.
Now you could theoretically, you know, get your piece past a place and then just focus on mostly making a wall, except for one spot.
Yeah.
But you know that's yeah.
And when you're placing a door, you can place it anywhere you want.
Yep.
Okay, so it's not like it has to be adjacent to a door you've already placed or
anywhere.
Anything.
Yep.
So you cannot block off any one space completely.
Correct. And then your piece can move orthogonally.
Okay. And so, you're not trying to get from one corner to the opposite corner. You're just trying to get from one side to the other side.
Yep.
Okay. So it's not like you have to get to one specific square.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, that sounds neat. It sounds very, very simple.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, you can learn to play it in like a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you'll spend a lot of time thinking about strategies for it.
Yeah, I respect that. That's interesting.
And the cool thing is, you know, every time you play a piece, you're not moving your token.
Right.
Which is the goal of the game.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. So you could move, you start moving your token all the way across, but then somebody's going to put a door of one of their pieces in your way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you have to move orthogonally. And,
right. And
so they could keep blocking you. But that's like, okay, then I'll just start blocking you.
Right, right. If you're not going to make it possible for me to move, then I'm going to have to block you instead.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's incredibly simple and very interesting.
Yeah, I'll bring it sometime.
I would like to try that.
Try and play it.
It seems like it could play fast, but might not.
Yeah, it's one of those games that plays fast at first, and then as you get into it, you're like, oh, crap, what
yeah.
am I going to do?
Yeah. Is it 4x4, 5x5? Do you know maybe more space?
The grid? Oh, yeah. It's more than that.
More than that?
It's probably 10 by 10.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so it's a big board.
It's a big board.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, the board is like that, yeah. probably.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll bring it sometime. It's yeah. a fun game. It was expensive because it's all
cardboard. All made out of wood, yeah. 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 That'd be the kind of thing I could make in my garage and be really proud of myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'll show it to you. Because you could make this whole thing on your own.
I yeah.
mean, for sure.
Right. Man, that's cool. I like that. I like the sound of that. So. Hmm.
Yeah, I've been meaning to tell you about it for a long time now, ever since you got Quadify, because it's like another game like that. So, but what have you been playing?
Well, on our way over, well, before we went over to my father-in-law's house for Thanksgiving, he called my wife and said, "You guys should bring some of your games. I always like playing your games." And we struggle with that because the only game he's ever tried to play that he enjoyed was Cards Against Humanity.
Of course he did.
You know, and I mean, that's a great game, but Christine and I are at the point where we've played it so many times that we just kind of don't really enjoy it anymore because we've heard all the jokes, you know?
Right.
And he's only played it the one time, but I think if he were to play it again, I think he would have less fun for that same reason.
Oh, yeah.
Same with all of Christine's sisters. So when he called and said that, I know he was saying, you should bring that crazy card game so that we can play a vulgar game together. But he didn't specifically identify that game to bring. So we didn't bring that.
Nice.
We brought Downfall of Pompeii, and we brought Ticket to Ride, and we brought, we brought Love Letter, and we brought Rumpelbum. And I feel like we brought something else. Oh, Divinair. And I was really hoping we could get a game of Divinair.
I really want to play that.
Gosh, man, because Christine and I have only played the one time with two-player game. It was neat, but I think it would be so much better with four. And we ended up not playing any of those.
Did you play any games?
We played Fight Over Who Gets to Pick the Next Record.
Oh, that sounds like a fun game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so it was... My father-in-law has a really big record collection. He's got a lot of good stuff, and he's got a lot of garbage in there. And so my sister-in-law and I, I would jump down and I would get a record. And at first we'd listen to a whole side. And then we got a little bit farther in, and, you know, we were never listening to an entire album. We would listen to one side. And then after a while, we'd listen to, like, three songs on one side. And then it got to the point where we would just listen to the first song. And then, you know, somebody would get up and turn it off and pick a new one. Yeah, I wonder if there's an actual game in that. Probably not.
There's not.
No.
Stop thinking about
it. Just one of those dumb family things that you kind of enjoy while it's happening, but there's no logical reason why it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also played a game that my friends and I used to play back when we were in college days that I used to call Drunken Comics, where we would just pass the sketchbook around and keep drawing on the same piece of paper, pass around the sketchbook and the pen or the pencil and pass it around. And that was fun. And so we did that some at their house too. But that's all.
Wow. Cool story, bro.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry. Kind of nailed that there, huh?
Yeah.
Nailed it to the wall.
Hey, you know what we could do?
And ruined it.
We could move on to the feature of the week. Or...
or?
We could talk about beer.
We could talk about beer. Real quick, though, I want to acknowledge something here. To everybody out there, you're probably wondering what's going on with the Cardboard Arcade Contest. We haven't been able to connect with Chevy yet. Just our schedules haven't lined up. So it's going to be a couple more weeks, I think, before we can announce a winner for that one. We really, really want to do that with Chevy back on the show. So we promise we have not forgotten about that. We are still on target to do that. But schedules didn't work out for recording this week. So we'll get him probably in 2 weeks. So you guys can look forward to that right before Christmas.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, what were you saying?
I said, let's talk about beer.
Beer. What do you say we crack open a cold one here?
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
This is, go ahead, explain this what this
exciting.
Is.
So, we talked about on the last show, I think, or the show before, one of the two, I think it was the show before the last, 2 weeks ago, we talked about meeting, Nate Darty. Yep. He came through town with, his, nice wife, Jamie.
Yep.
And we, hung out with him for a bit, had some breakfast, and he brought us some beer.
He did, some homemade craft brewed.
Yeah. And it's gingerbread beer,
mm-hmm.
Or so we're told.
So we're told.
We're about to open it.
Right. But tell the listeners what Nate told us to be careful about.
Nate said, I left it. It's been sitting out for a very long time.
Yeah.
And he said, reason tells me that it should still be good, but...
But...
It may not be.
So if it smells weird when you open it, don't drink it.
But he also sent me a message recently that said he actually found... another one of those at home, and okay. He opened it, and it was good.
All right.
Now, well, maybe he's just lying to us.
He might
know.
Be lying. He might be
maybe
a dirty liar.
Maybe he actually is not a fan of the show, and he just hates the show, and he
maybe
wants to poison
tries,
us.
Yes, trying to poison us. It's the end of our lives here.
Well,
okay.
Sorry about your luck, dude. Now it's on record.
Right, so if...
Of course, nobody's going to produce this show if that happens.
Right, so...
Oh.
He must really hate the show.
You did good.
All right, here we go. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to try and open this for the microphone.
It's going to explode.
Oh, that was a good little...
That was a good sound.
Yeah. Oh.
And it exploded,
all
just
over
like
the
I
floor.
Said it.
Wow. I'm going to need to stop recording here and get some paper towels.
I can laugh because it's not my house.
Not your house.
We're going to take a quick break, folks, and then we'll be back to try the beer.
Yeah. Crap.
I literally don't...
Unplug my headphones too.
I literally don't know how to help you.
There's no way to help me. Oh, crap. Oh. Smells good, though. Smells good.
It does smell really
smells
good.
Smells great.
The beer does not smell bad. That's
smell
a good sign. Rob has gone downstairs to get some beer, folks. It's just you and me. So, how you doing, huh? I'm just sitting here holding some beer. Can't really drink it yet because there's foam everywhere. The best is, when Rob comes back, after he cleans this up, we're going to open another one. And the chances are, it's going to explode too. So wait for that.
Oh, no.
Good times.
No. This is so not good. My wife is going to be so pissed.
Yeah. His wife is a very nice lady, but she's not going to be happy.
Oh, man. I bet it's going to stain the carpet. It looks like dark beer, too.
I mean, let's be honest. If you had to stain carpet in one room of your house, this is probably the best
one.
Right,
it's the safest one.
Now it's going to smell like gingerbread in here for the rest of our lives.
It's going to smell okay. I mean, it smells.
It smells really good. It smells like you lit a gingerbread candle in here.
It does. In fact, I think it smells better.
Yeah, well, because you can also drink it.
Right.
And there's alcohol in it.
We're still recording. Oh, dang.
I've been narrating the show while you left.
Freaking documentary podcast right here. Documentary podcast.
You said you were going to cut and you didn't stop recording, so I just kept talking to the audience.
I panicked. Nate, thanks a lot, pal. Thanks a lot. That's good recording. That's good entertainment for you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm taking a picture right now, which I'm going to tweet.
Oh, dang, of course you are.
I'm just going to say, tune into the next episode of Podcast BTG to find out what this is.
See what this is all about. Let's try this again here.
So, we've cleaned up. Now.
So, yeah, we've cleaned up. So, the crisis has been averted. I took the second bottle downstairs to the kitchen where I opened it over the sink, and it is foaming right now as we speak, dripping safely into the sink. We'll be bringing that up when it's done foaming. She promised she would take a keep an eye on it, and we will be sampling that a little bit later in the show.
Yes, so we'll come back to that.
Yeah. I'm glad that happened while we were recording, though.
Me too, because if you're going to stain your carpet, it might as well be for the good of the podcast, right?
For the entertainment of the good people out there in the internet land. My hands are sticky, man. What were we doing?
Best end of the show clip ever, by
the way.
Where
are we? Let's. Oh, yeah, we were recording a podcast here.
Wow. So, yeah, got a little off track.
Does smell good, though. I'm looking forward to drinking it at some point. How about our feature of the week?
Let's talk about our feature of the week. Shall we?
What do you got, sir?
Okay, well, I was thinking about, you know, all the different things we talk to people about. You know, one of the things that comes up in a lot of our just personal conversations about being designers, things we haven't talked about on the show, you know, one of those big things is kind of community and the game design community. And we've talked about on the show how we're proponents for that and wanting to enhance the community. But I thought we could talk a little more about that. Kind of, you know, one of the biggest questions we get asked by people, hands down, is what do I do to meet people and to find others who are designing board games, right? And I just think that we've been asked it so many times, and that was one of the biggest questions we asked ourselves in the beginning, and the fact was we didn't know, and
right.
maybe we still don't know, I'm not sure, but...
We know more than we used to, though.
We sure know more than we used
to. And it's the kind of thing we probably should have talked about sooner.
Yeah, and I know we've touched on it on the show before, but we're going to devote this time just mm-hmm. to that.
Community. And community. Getting into a community, building a community.
Getting to know each other.
Getting dun, to know dun, you. Getting to know... you know, community, it really is kind of an important part of this whole project that we're doing. I mean, we don't want to just build games. We also want to build a community.
Right.
And, you know, we're not pretending that we're going to do that ourselves from scratch and build the best community either, but we want to be a part of communities and help them grow, the game design community.
Certainly. I mean, that's, you know, if you're designing games by yourself, for yourself, mm-hmm. and that makes you happy, great. Mm-hmm. Keep doing that.
Yeah. So what did we do when we were starting this podcast? First thing we did is we just started a podcast, not knowing anybody or anything.
Right.
Right.
I like stress on the anything.
Yeah. And pretty soon after that, we went to Gen Con and we just talked to people.
Yep.
You know, we went to panels and we met people and we shook hands, you know.
A lot of hands
shaken. We just talked to people about the show as much as we possibly could.
Right. And I'll tell you, that first Gen Con, that was where we met a lot of people that we're still friends with now.
Absolutely. And then after a while, we said, you know, we need to start interviewing some people for the show. You know, we want to get some more perspectives in there. And so we just started emailing people and saying, hey, you know, we'd really like to talk to you about this subject. First person we ever talked to was Chris Kirkman from Dice Hate Me. And he was very generous with his time and a great guest. We were pleased to have him as our first interview.
For sure.
And really, I mean, that's kind of what it took. We just started talking to people and putting ourselves out there and saying, hey, I'm who I am. Tell me about who you are and what you're working on. And that's kind of been the most successful thing for us.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think one thing that will help you with community and becoming part of the community is just be genuine. You know what I mean? Be interested in other people's projects. I mean, because I've met designers that really aren't interested in other people's projects, and you know that's kind of
a bummer.
It is kind of a bummer because you know the basis of a community is communication, right? So you know, you really want to have that mentality of we're all in this together, right?
Yeah.
And I think the best way to do that is to be open and talk about each other's projects, and you know, I know some designers fall into that, you know. I don't want to talk about my stuff because it's a secret because it's not ready yet. And obviously we don't ascribe to that at all.
No. We think that's kind of a silly attitude.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of have to be that way because we're constantly talking about ideas that, you know, that are so fresh, they're not even fleshed out at all. And we're telling them to the world. You know?
Right. So, obviously though, not everybody listening to the show here is going to have a podcast and going to have a reason to email people randomly out of the blue to invite them for an interview.
True story.
You know, so other things that we have done that don't necessarily connect with the podcast, through talking to people, we learned about programs like Unpub.
Yep.
You know, Unpub is a great way, great community to get involved with and to meet and talk to people through.
Most definitely. Mm-hmm. Unpub is really good for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, Twitter. Twitter is really kind of one of the best ways we've been able to grow the community that we've become a part of and kind of participate in that community.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, most of the designers that we know now, we talk to on Twitter pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And we're constantly meeting new people and people that found out about us via the, you know, like they know about the show when they start talking to us, or people that just see us on Twitter talking about games.
Right.
I think that Twitter is one of the simplest ways to get in talking to people.
It sure is. Yeah.
and it's great for that. It's absolutely great for that. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, once you move beyond that, we're busy. It's not like I call other designers on the phone and be like, hey, how's it going? Mm-hmm. What's up with your game designs? I mean, you and I do that, but not on the phone. We do that in person.
Yeah.
If you live near other game designers, if you're fortunate enough to live in the East Coast, you probably live near 1,000 game designers.
Yeah.
Because most of the game designers we know are mostly East Coast.
East Coast guys,
it just seems like, I mean, that's an overgeneralization, of course, but a lot of them really feels that are.
Way. Yeah.
Being that we're in the middle, there are not many designers that we know personally in Michigan. There are not tons of them. Mm-hmm. So obviously Jason Katarski, and there are some others that we talk to as well, but. So, I mean, if you're not talking to people on the phone all the time or seeing them in person, I found Google Hangout is a really good tool just to be able to chat with people back and forth in real time. I do that specifically a lot with Chevy and with Neil Roberts because they're easy people to talk to ask questions and to go back and forth about stuff we're working on. And it's just right there. And I'm at my computer all day. So I have Gmail up all day, so I can use Google Chat sometimes. Unless you're my boss and you're listening to this, and I don't do it that often, really. So,
never. Yeah. Now there can be some tough things, though. I mean, you know, every community has cliques. You know,
right?
Every community has cliques and people that you might not really get along with, and people that don't share your values or your opinions and things and. And that's tough. And sometimes it can be difficult to find the right group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one thing you have to remember is when we came into this, or when any designer comes into this, you're the new guy.
Yeah.
There are people that have been doing this for years and they have their groups they work with consistently, you know? So sometimes maybe you feel like you're just busting your way into that group, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's important to remember that. You know, even though you may feel that way, like, hey, you know, I see this group over here or this group over there, and maybe they're not interested in dealing with new designers. You know, I mean, maybe you make your own group, right? You know, you start to talk to designers you can identify with. You befriend them. I mean, because that's, you know, I mean, I feel like we're teaching you how to make friends, people. but I mean, it's not, it really is about. Really, in the end, making friends. Because if you're going to have a meaningful community, it really helps if you have meaningful relationships and friendships. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, you really just have to put yourself out there. I mean, I know that's silly to just say that. Put yourself out there. But it's true.
Yeah.
Right?
So, all right. So, you can try and key into some existing communities. So, there obviously is Board Game Geek. There are... probably thousands of people, I would guess, on the forums on Board Game Geek every day, right?
Yep.
That's a massive community you can get into right there. The Game Crafter has incredible forums and chats and really great place for you to meet people, talk to people about design. Because everybody on there is a game designer, you know?
Right.
You can talk to reach out to other podcasts that are out there. You know, we're not the only one. I think we're the best one, but we're not the only one, you know, reach out to other fans of those shows. Find something that interests you and, you know, try to become a part of it.
And don't feel like, you know, don't force it, right? Like if you're thinking, oh, like we just, for instance, Rob just said, go to the BGG forums or go to the Game Crafter forums and talk and chat there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest. I don't enjoy any of that.
No, I don't either.
So, frankly. I mean, I have a BGG account that I never use.
Yeah.
I had to make myself a designer on there just so I could put Water Balloon Washout up and put my name as the designer. Other than that, I don't ever use my account. But that said, if you're into that, it's a great resource. And there's tons of people talking about tons of stuff. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
You know, the Game Crafter forums, by the way, though, super awesome if you have questions for people. You know, if you pop in there and ask a question, someone will answer you pretty quick.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredibly awesome that there are people there to do that. So, you know, you don't have to be like a full-fledged member of any little community if you just want to ask some questions, you know? I mean, generally there are people there that are willing to help.
Yeah.
Now, so word of warning, we talked about the fact that sometimes, you know, there can be kind of cliques or groups and maybe they're not accepting new members, quote unquote. You know... you're going to meet designers. Like Rob said, you know, there are designers out there. I mean, I know designers who don't talk to other designers, like specifically, like one person doesn't talk to another. Because, I mean, like every bit of your life, there are going to be people you don't get along with, right? And you're going to meet designers. You're going to meet specific people and you're going to be like, wow, I feel like that guy's kind of a jerk. Or that girl. Let's be fair here.
Sure.
I mean, maybe you meet Rob and I in person and you're like, wow, I love their podcast. It's so amazing. But what jerks they are in real life. Somebody actually said that one time, by the way. It was a friend of ours, so that's okay. But they said we sound nice, much nicer on the podcast. But I mean, when you meet those people, even if those are some of the first people you meet, don't let that turn you off from, you know, trying to get together with more game designers in groups, because those people are out there, because they're everywhere in the world, in every facet of your life, as you should know if you're a human being living in planet Earth. So just don't let that get you down about it, because we were fortunate enough to meet pretty much all awesome people right away. So by the time we ran into anybody who wasn't so nice, it was just kind of like, whatever, I don't got time for that, because, you know, I mean, there are so many awesome people. So don't forget that, you know. So in summary, maybe you're like, and just I want to just kind of wrap this topic up. Maybe you're like, why do I have to have a community? Maybe I'm happy designing on my own and sending stuff out to publishers. And that may work. I mean, I certainly, the first publisher I ever met that was interested in one of my games, I met without knowing anyone. But I met them because they found my game on the unpublished, because I joined that group. But that said, you could still be successful and never talk to anyone anywhere. But you're going to have more fun, and you're really, honestly, more likely to be successful and more likely to sell a game to someone if you start to talk to people. I mean, it's not like it's, you hate to say, it's about who you know, not what you're doing. Because if you're designing crappy games, it doesn't matter who you know. No one's going to buy them, right? I mean, that's something we all think about when we design our games, right? so just remember that, you know, getting to know those people will eventually be good for you in multiple ways. You know, one, it's always good to have those friends because the feedback that you can give each other is great. And when you're helping out another game designer and giving them feedback on their games, that helps you too, because it makes you think about things in different ways. It's a good kind of mental designer exercise, I think. At least, I mean, I know for you and I, Rob, giving each other feedback on our games really helps. You know, when I give you feedback, that helps me on some of my designs sometimes. I mean, some cool design ideas I've thought of were because I gave you feedback, you know, on one of your games.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. That, you know, you don't have to reach out to other people. I mean, this is a hobby that does not require community, but I think it's a more fun hobby, and it's a more successful and more rewarding hobby. Right. If you share it with people.
And the thing is, the last thing to think about, when it comes to meeting other designers and stuff, it should be really easy because you have a guaranteed common interest, and that's playing games. Even just take the designing out of it, like, they're all there to play games.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Good.
I suppose we can move on.
Yeah, okay.
But,
sure.
Yeah. Feel good about that.
Well, then our next segment, as our listeners are probably aware, is practicing the pitch. And
it is.
It's your turn. It's your turn.
I'm unprepared. I didn't bring anything.
You're a liar.
Yeah, I know. That could happen, though. I mean, could happen one time. I could just forget.
It
sounds more like something you would do.
Yeah, actually it does, yeah. I got nothing, Jason. I got nothing. It's your show.
So, I'm going to pitch a game that we've never pitched on the show, but that we've talked about on the show more than once. You and I started talking about this game again, and I decided that, you suggested, and then I decided, you were like, you should pitch the game on the show as your pitch this week. And I said, well, I don't have anything else to pitch, so that sounds like an awesome idea.
Yeah.
And so I've been thinking a lot about this game. And that game, as many of you who are longtime fans of the show will recall, is Scrapyard Cats.
Bam.
What? So, Scrapyard Cats.
Scrapyard Cats, yo.
All right.
Okay, what do you got for Scrapyard Cats?
All right.
So, this was the time trading memory game.
Yes.
That people might remember. Let me give people a quick recap of the history of Scrapyard Cats.
Please do.
Scrapyard Cats was an idea born of, we were talking about memory games, right? Originally. And talking about building things in a junkyard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the details of that original concept, but it was a memory game about trying to find specific pieces that you need in the junkyard to build equipment. And we were trying to think of a name, and Junkyard Dogs was too easy, so we eventually landed on Scrapyard Cats.
That's right.
With a Z in cats.
Yeah,
cats.
Like D-A-W-G.
Yeah.
C-A-T-Z.
Right. And then a little bit later, several months later, we were talking about the concept of apps or digital things, other components, like, for example, for an iPhone app, right?
Right.
An iPhone or Android app to add to the game experience. And we had come up with the idea of Scrapyard Cats, the time trading memory game, where each person would have to or the collection of items from the junkyard would cost seconds.
Yes.
Right, it'd be a timed game, and you would need to, in order to get stuff, you would the number of seconds that you have left between players.
Right.
Never really got much farther than that kind of weird concept, further exploration of the idea got really complicated and a little kind of difficult. And
we had some good conversations with Neil Roberts at Gen Con about the app and about how it could work, and
but the whole thing just kind of felt awkward.
It got really convoluted.
Yeah. But, so that is the history of Scrapyard Cats, the time trading memory game.
But correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe something that I'm certainly going to include in the game today was an idea Neil had when we talked about it.
Okay.
we talked about, because we started talking about trading time, and then I said, what if it was time machines? Like, what if they were trying to build time machines? And Neil said, and this is my favorite thing about the game now.
Yeah.
He said, what if they weren't trying to build time machines? What if it was a scrapyard full of broken time machine parts?
Yeah.
And they were trying to build can openers and all these mundane appliances, but they kept accidentally making time machines.
Yeah, I think that did come from him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that's so ridiculous.
It's super ridiculous.
But incredibly awesome as well. That said... Okay.
All right.
So the whole idea of trading time in the app thing made it really, really tough to try and figure out. So when I started thinking about this again, I just dropped that.
Yeah.
Right? I just got rid of it. And I said, what we really have here is we really have a memory game, but mm-hmm. how can I make this memory game unique? Not just have it be let's match two things. That certainly is part of it. But let's not have it just be a standard memory grid that you're playing on. So, in keeping with the time travel thing, I thought it would be cool if the game was set up like this. You had 3 3x3 grids. So, 3 9-card blocks of memory things, right?
Yeah.
In a line. First one is the past. The middle one is the present.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is the future.
Got it.
So, there's our 3 time streams. Keeps it real simple.
Time streams.
Past, present, and future, right? Yeah. Now, you are cats living in the present in the scrapyard. You're genius scientist cats. And everybody else in the junkyard is like, man, we need stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help us build some stuff? I'm like, what do you need? We need mechanical mice. We need can openers. We need automatic feeders. We need water purifiers. I need a cat condo.
Mm-hmm.
So
laser pointer. I gotta chase that laser pointer, man.
Yeah,
no, it's just I'm just hooked, man.
Exactly.
I mean, you know,
I can give me more laser pointer.
Do you got any laser? You got any laser?
Exactly.
I could use some laser, man. Man, what do you need? What do you need? If you got some laser, I got something for you.
I'll take some laser. So these really smart.
I like that the cats are junkies for the laser pointer.
these really smart cats who are very well read, and they have. I think they should have awesome names like Hemingway and Jefferson and Galahad and all these silly names. And then you have one dumb cat named Mr. Pickles.
Mr. Pickles. You
know, because that is the dumbest cat ever. So you've got these smart cats. There's 8 of them, right?
Uh-huh.
And they all have a variable player power. And at the beginning of the game, you're randomly given one, or some way you're given those. Maybe you get to choose. I don't know.
Okay.
Now, the people, like I said, in the junkyard, I mean, the scrapyard, scrapyard. Yeah, I know, yo. they're saying, hey, we need this stuff. So you've got your 3 things set up. And what you do is you have a stack of cards of about, I think right now I figured 15 cards that are things they want built, like the laser pointers and the candle pointers, that kind of stuff. So to build that, you actually have six of them laid out at the beginning of the game, three above the present memory grid, and three above the future memory grid, none above the past memory grid.
Okay.
So then your goal is, starting in the present, is to match things out of the memory grid, trying to make the recipes that are out there. The catch is everyone can make the recipes at any time in the current timeline that they're in, right?
In the present.
So the when I make that, right? Say I make the can opener, for instance, it now moves from the present into the past. So now there's one thing in the past grid. Does that make sense?
Okay.
It's
like a blueprint or a schematic or something.
And then one from the future moves to the present. A new one moves into the future. So what you've got now is I could still go into the past and build that and earn points for it, because you score points for building those items, right? So you score points for building those. Now, the points are staggered. In the future, say it's worth 5 points if you build it. In the present, it's worth 3, and in the past, it's only worth 1.
Okay.
And you're trying to get to, say, 20 points, and there'd be little counters to count your points, because you don't actually take the card when you build it, because it moves to... If you build in the past, it gets discarded, and then it's gone for good. Now, for these memory grids, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking... You could run into some issues with matching, right? Because you can only look at one at a time. You can only look at the time stream you're in. And I thought, well, what if the matches in the present are actually in the past? And that would just be so painful. So I thought, great. Let's make 3 decks of 27 cards each to fill those 9x9 grids. One for the past, one for the present, one for the future. So most of your things you're trying to build require parts from more than one time stream. Does that make sense?
Okay.
In addition to that, some of the cards you flip over are action cards. You don't have to match those. You just automatically take them into your hand. The action cards are going to let you do other things, like travel in time or screw up your opponent. And there's a few different action cards. And then each time stream has like a unique action card that if you get that action card, it's a one-time use. It would be super awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in each time stream. May or may not be out, though, because, you know, you've got 27 cards, so you may not have gotten to it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. So every time you build an item,
mm-hmm.
you have to roll to see if that item is legit or if it's a time machine. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's like a range that each item has, depending on its point value. And... when it hits, say the range is 1 to 10 for a high point value one, right? Or maybe they would all be 1 to 10. So you've got like a 10-sided die.
Okay.
Still follow me?
Yep.
So a really low point card would be be mostly successful. Like 8 and lower is successful. Okay?
Okay.
9 and higher means you get teleported to another time stream and the item wasn't what you tried to make, right?
Okay.
And so the item would just stay there. The higher point items you go for, the more risk that they, you know. In fact, it might be kind of fun to have a buffer zone. So like if 1 through 7 means it's successful, 8 means that it is, 8 means that it's successful and still a time machine. So not only is it successful, but then you still get kicked to another timeline. Or 9 and 10, it's just a time machine. So
how do you know which other time period you get switched to?
Yeah. So now let's talk about the problems.
Okay.
So one of the problems is you actually want to get switched around timelines?
Sometimes.
Because, you know, anything you need is going to be... in the past, present, or future, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if an item has multiple requirements, you're going to need to be able to time travel to get to those things. So I guess what I'm struggling with this game is, how do I make it so that I have the ability to time travel when I need to, because otherwise the game would just suck if you can't time travel, right?
Mm-hmm. I think what you'd have to do is you'd have to when you get the components to build the item, I think you have to declare whether you're building that item or building a time machine, and then you need to roll to see if you're successful in that goal.
That's a good point. What if you could just discard cards? Because it's so easy for these cats to build time machines. What if you could just, if you at any point discard two non-matching cards, or two, we'll just say two cards to make it simple, you automatically can go to a different place. Does that make sense? You can go to a different time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's that easy to build time machines out of these parts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On a theme note, I think it'd be funnier if the players weren't genius cats. I think it'd be funnier if the players were just regular cats that happened to be in a mad scientist's scrapyard. And then...
Well, yeah, they're in a mad... I mean, that makes sense, but...
Yeah, but I think if they're regular cats, then it kind of is funnier that they're not genius cats. Because it seems like a real genius cat would be able to do exactly what he wants when he wants to.
He's still a cat, dude.
Yeah, but he's
still
a genius
cat trying to build electronic devices.
Well, that's neither here nor there for gameplay. Okay, so let me I'm trying to think through a turn. So it's my turn. How many cards am my player token is in one of the three timelines, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Okay. Do I turn over a card and then take it?
You turn over two cards.
I turn over two cards. Well, we're still going.
Whew.
Yeah.
You turn over two cards. If they match, you get to keep one. You get to keep those two cards.
If they match.
Or if it's an action card, you get to take it.
Okay. So I turn over two cards. If it's two jingle bells, I get both of the jingle bells.
Yes.
If it's a jingle bell and a pom-pom, I don't get them.
Correct.
If it's a jingle bell and an action card, I take the action card.
Correct.
If it's two action cards, I take both action cards.
Correct.
All right. And then the next, if I don't get anything, then the next guy knows something about what I just turned over. Okay.
Right.
Because Rumplebum, of course, is a memory game, and I did that by having different phases where everybody flips and then you go back and draw. And then you decide whether you want to take something that you already know what it is or if you want to take a mystery card. That's how I did that in Rumplebum.
I have an idea.
Okay. I'm not saying that Rumplebum is a better way to do it.
No, in fact, I'm purposely trying to make it not like Rumplebum.
Yeah, and I'm just commenting on that difference to make sure it's straight in my head.
Right.
Okay.
What if... So this is aside from the memory mechanic. What if one cast starts in the present... Well, that means it can only be a 1-3 player game.
Yeah.
Well...
2-3 player game.
Not necessarily. Everybody starts in the present. As soon as one person time travels, everyone time travels. Every time one player time travels, all other players also time travel.
Oh, so like zaps everybody.
And the player who's taking the action gets to decide where everybody goes.
Hmm.
So you could try to hose people. I think that adds a big layer of strategy.
That puts everybody in the same time all the time.
No. No, no, no. We all start in the present, but if I decide I need to go to the past because there's something I really want to get, I could hop to the past, kick all you guys to the future.
Hmm.
So what it would do is it would mean people were constantly moving. Whereas.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not opposed to that. That's worth trying for sure. Okay. But I'm still trying to go through the whole turn here. So, all right. So I have flipped two cards and let's say it's several rounds in and I have some cards and now I am, instead of flipping and drawing, I'm ready to build a device. Now, let's say I'm in the present, and I have enough cards to build something in the present, and I'm going to build the cat condo.
Yep.
All right. Now, do I take that cat condo card for scoring? No, I don't. Do I?
No.
No. Okay. I successfully build that, and then I roll my die, and let's say I don't turn into a time machine.
Yep.
Okay. Then I move the cat condo card from the present into the past.
Yep.
and then something from the future shifts into the present, mm-hmm. and a new card is drawn and placed into the future.
Correct.
Okay.
And if the past was full, the last card would get shoved out.
Okay. And then I have some kind of a score tracker to track the points that I got for that building that cat condo.
Mm-hmm.
And the cards, the components that I use for my hand to build that just go into a discard pile.
Correct.
All right. And if I have cards, components from both past, present, and future, I need to sort those out into the three separate discard piles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think for each of the time periods, you would need some components be the same and some be different.
Okay.
You know, like tangled wires should be in everything. But you know, jingle bells would only be in the present and
like bright, the laser generator would only be in the future.
Future, right. And feathers would be in the past.
Right.
You know?
Here's a quick thought that could change everything. So the whole memory thing is kind of a bummer to me, right? The whole idea that I have to flip a card, does it match either card? Because mm-hmm. it can be really hard to keep straight because you're in three timelines, right?
Yeah.
So you're dealing with three grids you have to try and remember.
Right.
What if instead it was this? What if in the beginning you get dealt a six-card hand? Two past cards, two present cards, two future cards, right? So this would actually allow you to reduce the size of the decks as well. So each player has six cards in their hand. Two of each. When I go to a timeline, like I'm in the present, right? I flip a card. I look at it. If I want to keep it, I keep it. But I have to take one of my cards and put it back down. But I have to be able to put one of the present cards down, right? Because I'm in the present. But if I don't have a present card, that means I'm going to have to put down either one of the future or the past cards, which is going to create an anomaly.
Okay.
Because now you've got an item from the past or present, I mean, item from the past or future in the present, and vice versa. That would work in any of them. So now it's like, I pick up a card, yeah, I'll take it. So like Rumplebum, where I pick up a card and I take it, except for I now have to give a carve out of my hand, because you're trying to make sure the space-time continuum stays steady. So it's like okay. Indiana Jones, when I pick up the idol, I have to put something on there to try and balance it out.
Okay. Yeah, that's all right. Now, what happens, though, when I build a component or I build a device and I have to get rid of components? Do I immediately draw more components into my hand, more new ones into my hand? Because in your setup there, you have like a constant always six cards in your hand, and I'm cool with that. But I'm just worried about when I have to build a device and then that means I have to discard cards to do that. How do I get my hand back up to six?
Maybe you would just...
You know, I mean, there just needs to be an answer to that question as well. You know, I mean, I don't know how you want to answer that. I mean, whatever. Maybe make me draw one randomly for... If every device costs three, then you just draw one randomly from each of the time periods and boom, away you go. That might be too generous. But, you know, it's a question.
Right.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of a way to make it tougher. Like, you could go... Like, so if you have six cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you spend three, now you're down to three cards.
Yeah.
Right? Now, where that gets tricky is action cards, because you're going to be spending action cards, which are going to force you to lose cards. So
there's
going
to have to be some way that you can get more cards into your hand. You can just say maximum hand size is six.
Right.
You know, that's an easy thing to do. So if you don't have six in your hand, then you can draw a card and take it, and then a new one goes out into the table from the draw deck.
Oh, I see what you mean. So if you have less than six, you can start just taking stuff. Yeah, I like that.
We're kind of getting away from the memory aspect a little bit.
Well, yeah.
Because at that point, nobody knows what card you just put down. You're not actually revealing stuff to everybody for everybody to keep track of.
What if you...
And I'm okay with that. Again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I don't know how hooked you are on the memory aspect of that.
I'm not super hooked on it, but here's a way to keep that.
Okay.
What if... When I put the card down, I have to show everybody what it is.
You could do that.
It's like a face-up discard, except for it's face down.
Sure.
And you might be two timelines away from it, trying to get back to it, right?
Yeah. Okay.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because that gives you some advantage, too. Like, oh, I got something I want. It's good. Here's what I'm putting down.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I put in the rules for Rumplebum that the etiquette is, when you're in your flip phase, that you flip the card over and you're supposed to say what that card is. That's a crunchy ant. That's a savory centipede. And then you flip it back. And you want to say that out loud. I want you as players. Now, obviously, you don't have to. It depends on how ruthless, how cutthroat you want to be while playing the game. But, you know, that's just kind of a friendly way to play.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Concur.
Okay. Yeah, so the time-traveling memory game.
Yeah, I like that better, I think, though. I like the idea that mm-hmm. you're not, you know, the memory aspect is that you're seeing what people are discarding, you know?
Yeah.
So maximum hand size of six, and any time that you have six cards, you have to trade. So.
Come on in.
This is perfect timing.
Hey, guys. Well, sorry about that abrupt cut there. My wife just knocked on the door to bring us that beer, and she refuses to be recorded, so she required me to turn off the recording before she came in and dropped off the beer. So
right.
That's the reason for the odd cut. We are now going to try Nate's gingerbread beer. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
That's tasty.
It is good. Yeah, I bet it would have been better before it was flat.
Because you let it sit out for so long.
Right. But yeah, that is tasty. I could drink a lot of that. Ooh.
I could drink a lot of that, too. It goes down pretty smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Good work, sir. Send more beer next time you come. Bring yeah. more beer. Ooh. Yeah.
Delicious.
Good stuff.
Ooh.
I feel like I have a gingerbread house in my mouth.
Ooh. And there's a party in that gingerbread house, and some of the gingerbread people in there have taken it a bit too far. You know,
I don't know what you're
they're getting a little
about.
Rowdy, you know.
You're weird. Hey, so, yeah, I think that's
anyway,
all.
Anyway, so, sorry. We need to wrap up here for Scrapyard Cats.
Yes. So, Scrapyard, I thought we already wrapped up.
Did we wrap up?
Yeah.
Beer distracted me. Let me make sure. Okay, so it's still the time traveling memory game.
Yes.
All right. Past, present, future. It's kind of light on the memory and more on the time travel. We've got set collection. We've got like recipe or schematic assembly. What's the end game? Did you play at a certain point level?
Yeah, like I was thinking 20 points.
20 points. Okay.
I mean, that could obviously be adjusted.
Mm-hmm. How many different levels of difficulty on the items, or are they all the same value?
I was thinking that you would make them different levels. I just did like a sheet, and I made them all worth the same.
Yeah.
5-3-1, 5-3-1 for future, present, past.
Okay.
The fun thing I think you could do is to really have the variable player powers be cool. I think there would be a lot of fun things you could do with that.
Okay. Right on.
Yeah.
Well, I like it. I like it. Scrapyard Cats. I think it's a viable option for the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
All right.
Okay.
Sweet.
We have some Twitter questions here, don't we?
We do.
Yeah. We got quite a few of them tonight.
We have like two or three.
Okay. Tonight. Go ahead.
One was from our friend Flip Flory from Flip the Table. He is our favorite clown, first of all. I just want to say that.
Yep. Everyone's favorite clown.
Everyone's favorite.
Even the people who don't know him.
That's right. And so he wants to know if we could come up with a better version of Car Bingo.
Better version of Car Bingo. Now, is it required that this be playable in the car?
I think that's the point. So, for anybody that doesn't know what Car Bingo is, Car Bingo is like a board. It's like a bingo board with little sliders to cover spots on it. And it's a bunch of stuff you might see in a car.
Yeah.
I've also heard it called Travel Bingo. I'm sure there's other names for it, depending on where you're from. Could we make a better version of that? First of all, yes. I think we could.
Go.
Well, I'm not going to just pitch a better version right now, but I would say that we could make a better version of that.
That's a really great way to answer his question. Thanks, Jason. The answer is yes, but I'm not going to explain.
The answer is yes, but I'm not sure how.
Okay, here's one.
I would involve dice.
Ready? This is not, though. It's the spirit, but not the letter of the question, okay? This is not Car Bingo. This is College Bar Bingo. Okay, so it's a bingo card.
But you're not playing it in the car.
I don't care. It's about being somewhere and observing, right? It's bingo at your local college bar, okay? And you have things on there like, you know, drunk frat guy, you know? Which, you know, that's easy one. There's dozens of those guys around. How about drunk frat guy and drunk sorority girl getting in an argument, you know?
Okay.
All right. Let's say bartender who is being a jerk. I don't know. Whatever. If I was more drunk right now, I'd be able to think of funnier stuff. Or if I just went out to a local college bar and started just observing stuff. I'm saying you could have all these little social party things.
Okay. Better version of car bingo.
Go.
You are in a car.
No way.
And you're bored. Instead of having items you need to see along the road, it's things you need to get people to say. Right?
Okay.
So just in conversation, I'm like, blah, blah, blah. We're just talking. And if I were to say to you, oh, Rob, what do you call a, but that one at work? You know what I mean? Because then you'd be like, well, I'm not going to say that word because I know you're trying to get me to say it for your car bingo. But if I were like just talking with you when we were talking about stuff and then I just got you to say it.
Yeah.
Then bants.
It's kind of like
reverse taboo.
I was going to say catchphrase.
Reverse catchphrase.
Yeah.
I like it better if you say reverse.
Reverse catchphrase.
Because you don't know, you're not trying to say the word. You're trying not to say the word. So the only rule of the game is you have to talk.
You have to talk. But one of the nice things about car bingo is that it keeps the kids silent in the back seat, right?
No, they're not, because they're like, oh, I got the exit sign.
All right.
Waka waka. Kids are loud, man.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know I have one.
Okay. Gosh, it feels like there's got to be other funny versions of X bingo that you can do.
I don't think there is.
You could do Las Vegas bingo. Just hang out on the Las Vegas Strip and just, you know, check things off as they walk by. Pickpocket. Stripper who hasn't been home yet. Guy giving out little pictures. Lady who's probably from Florida. Japanese tourists. I should stop.
Yeah, let's move on. So we had another question from Board Gameizer, and he wanted to know if any thoughts that we had on mechanically making Cthulhu dice better. That's an awesome question. It's an even better question for someone who's played Cthulhu dice.
Yeah, sadly, that is neither of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost bought it this past year at Gen Con, but then something else was more interesting.
Ah, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, we do not have a great answer for that one.
Sorry.
Thank you for trying, though.
Yeah, we appreciate
it. We will try to answer your question next time with the real answer. Yeah.
And if you guys don't know Board Gameizer, it's awesome. We've talked about it before. Go to Board Gameizer. It's awesome. Great. It's great.
And then the last one is from our friend Chris Michaud, who said, regarding humor in games, can you think of a game that has really sharp writing, but still manages solid gameplay after the humor wears off?
Well, the first thing that popped into my head was actually a video game, the Saints Row series, Saints Row 3 and Saints Row 4. But it's video games, not...
That is a really good answer,
Oh,
though.
Man. They're so funny. I just recently played the newest DLC for Saints 4, and I laughed out loud through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Out loud, like belly laughing through the whole thing.
I did that in parts of Saints Row 3.
Yeah. And the gameplay is, it's just fun. I mean,
perfect. I wouldn't change a thing.
No one would ever say it's technical and challenging, but it's pure fun. But that's a video game. In terms of a tabletop game, ooh, Fiasco.
Yeah.
But even then, it's the writing isn't funny. It's the experience that's funny.
Well, some of the writing is funny, though, when you look at the lists that they give you, lists of items you can have.
Yeah.
But yes, in general, that's more the onus on, you know, I think I swear I've played games before where the rules are pretty funny, but then the game holds up. But off the top of my head, I can't think of any of those.
Munchkin rules are kind of funny. They're well written.
Yeah, but I thought you said you weren't a big fan of the game.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I do enjoy the game, but...
I'm in the minority. I mean, I don't dislike the game. There's just other stuff that would interest me more. Gosh, that's a tough question.
Good way to stump us.
Yeah.
If we were playing Stump the Podcasters, you would win. Well, I guess so would Board Gameizer, since he asked us something we don't have an answer to.
Right. So, we lose tonight, Jason.
Doesn't surprise me.
We lose
every night, yeah. Rob. So on that note, hey.
Yeah, so, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. I guess that's going to be the end of it tonight. Quick reminders, Rumpelbum Academy is available at thegamecrafter.com. You can find a link to that in the show notes at buildinggamepodcast.com. And don't forget about Something From Nothing, our bi-weekly video podcast that we do. It's me and Jason and Chevy and TC Petty and whatever wonderful, exciting designer we or designers we happen to get online with us. Every other Sunday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 p.m., we get together and we talk about projects we're working on and game design in general. So we would love it if you guys would hang out. If you can't catch it live, you can also find the archived shows at the BTG Co-op site. That's BTG-COP.com. You can also find links on Chevy's website, chevydad.com. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland, and I'm at poorly_designed. You can like us on the Facebooks, and you can give us the 5-star reviews on iTunes, and you can come on back again next week and hang out with us where we will do more stupid stuff and probably drink some more good beer, because Nate gave us some more that we haven't drank yet.
That he did.
Yeah, so good night, one and all.
Good night!
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Well, this is a first.
The carpet looks awesome.
You see, it was tough too because when we set up in here, we get all like me especially, I got trapped behind a couple chairs and the microphone, and I'm like, I got cords hanging in front of me. So it's hard to get up and get out. Yours is you haven't opened yours yet.
What'd you say?
Haven't even opened yours yet.
No, I'm nervous.
I am too.